Hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Today we have Eliza Thorne. She is a singer-songwriter and touring musician who is based here out of Nashville.
If you are listening to this show on Spotify or any other platform, you're going to want to head on over to our YouTube channel at Rusik Podcast. Over there, you can check out live performances that Eliza did, as well as all of our other guests. Subscribe over there. Give us a follow. It helps us out a ton.
Kind of just freestyle it, but I thought exactly. Maybe we should think of like some segments.
You know what we should start
think
doing?
Think of a way to ambush your guests.
Yeah, exactly. Throw some curveballs at
We'll start bringing we'll start bringing like guest X's on and like,
we'll be
like
oh, there we go. We have a surprise for you.
Yeah. That would be hilarious.
Give us your shitty ex-boyfriend. We flew him in for North Carolina.
It'll be like Murray meets like a podcast. It's perfect.
Yeah, get like Jerry Springer thing.
Jerry Springer. That's something.
Oh my god. Yeah, no, we're definitely taking a more lax approach with this whole thing. What we should do though is we should start I think this would be kind of fun to like just really dig a hole right out of the gate with a guest. Just start with like the worst possible and then like spend the next like hour and a half just trying to like dig your way.
Yeah. Make them feel bad about themselves. I feel like definitely do that.
Yeah, exactly. If I was a guest on a podcast, that's probably how I would start, is just like, let's set the bar real fucking low and then see where we go. For my own clarification here, how long have you been in like the Nashville world now? Cause I feel like it's been a minute.
I'm coming up on 2.5 years now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Now this sounds so interviewing, but as soon as I pivot to music, it's like, oh shit. What was the reason for Nashville? I know it sounds like a silly question because it's just booming here, but why Nashville and not someplace else?
Several reasons, man. So I got fired from my job, broken up with, and
perfect.
Like 8 other things, like the
that's
fan.
Perfect. That's all the ingredients
week,
you need.
I moved from North Carolina, and I already had been toying with the idea of moving anyways, and had a bunch of friends that were, you know, just here on the other side, you know,
waiting for me.
And encouraging me to move out. So it just was the natural, you know, it was a very natural, easy move for me, which was cool. I already had people waiting here.
Cause you're from Connecticut originally, right? Did, why the North Carolina?
I moved there in my late teens.
Okay.
I had dropped out of school and I went to Canada. I went to school in Canada. Didn't jive. I kind of was like living on this little island and I missed.
Canada just wasn't for you.
No. I wanted it to be. I'm half Canadian, actually. Fun fact.
Oh, there you go.
But yeah, just I had never lived there. And our country has a lot of bad, but a lot of good too. And I do identify with the good parts of America, American music culture. And I was jonesing for it. So I had to move back and be a part of it. And, you know, I had some friends in North Carolina and was living out of my car. And it was really easy to make that happen because I had no belongings.
I love it. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Todd Snyder says, if you can put your life in a situation where you can pack up everything you own and inside of 15 minutes, you'll probably be okay doing this, you know? So that's smart. There's some wisdom in there. So what did you, like when you got to Nashville, cause I feel like for us, like it all kind of just happened pretty naturally. I feel like a lot of us that got to know each other, we kind of got here around roughly the same time and everything just sort of like weirdly fell into place. Not that like, you know, not that like we're like on top of the mountain right now, but like, I feel like our group of people that we found, like our friends, like everything just sort of unfolded as we got here. And like, it happened like very naturally. When you got to Nashville, what did you feel like that beginning stage was like getting here? Like, did you feel like it was easy to assimilate yourself in, or did it feel kind of guarded?
That's a great question. I actually,
every once in a while, it doesn't happen often, but every once in a while I get a good one.
At first it was a tough transition. You know, I just like uprooted everything. But I was really inspired to just like get good. There's just a different ceiling here. We had been doing the honky tonk circuit in North Carolina and regionally. And I had so many players that I admired and respected here and wanted to be a part of their, this music community, and everyone was incredibly welcoming. So I feel like the community itself here, I've lived in different cities in the country. This is one of the most welcoming communities.
I think we've talked about this before, but I think one of the things that's really nice about having the bar so fucking high here too, is it does just kind of naturally weed out the people that you don't want here. And in the sense that I think the people who stick around are the people who have that exact mentality, which is I'm here for the long haul. I'm here cause I like doing this and I want to get better and I want to be around the people who are better than me. I think that's a really unique thing with Nashville. I mean, I'm sure there are other spots, other musical pockets in the country where that's the case, but I just think that's one of the things I probably fall in love with, even inadvertently, with Nashville is that, which is really fucking cool. It's really awesome. So again, I feel like I'm all over the place right now. So you've been writing for a while, obviously. This has been kind of like, this is what you do. When did you first start getting into this kind of music? When did country music in this form kind of enter into your life?
I'd always been into old school, soul music, rock and roll. Yeah, just real good, traditional R&B music, rock and roll, A-side country music, really my late teens. The deal was sealed when I moved to North Carolina because I lived right down the hill from my favorite dive in the country, the Double Crown.
Oh, cool.
So I would just hike up the hill every night.
That's killer.
Close that bar down. And, some of my favorite country acts were there. I got to know some of the country players. And soon enough, I had been can I sit in? Can I sit in? And I started to do sit-ins. Our band grew from that. We started to play there. So, I think just spending time in that community and literally closing down that bar every night.
Where in North Carolina were you?
I was in Asheville.
Okay, awesome. How did you feel like, I haven't spent much of any time in Asheville. I know you've spent more time there than I have.
I won't once for a couple days. That's about it. But it seemed really cool. I like it there. And I've had friends that have lived there that the music scene there is really good.
Yeah.
What do you feel like the difference? I mean, obviously there's just the scale of Nashville is much larger, but what do you feel like the difference is between the two? Not necessarily the why is one better than the other, but why do they feel different to you?
I think you just said it yourself. There's just less acts, less people doing, country. And I don't even necessarily identify as a linear country performer or singer, but in this in this world, there was just less performers doing it, and the ones that were doing it did it well. But I wanted to be surrounded by more people that were doing it. And also I feel like when there is more people that are kind of playing in this, what feels like a niche world, it kind of lends a space for micro genres. So I feel like you can develop your own sound.
That's
but you're
cool.
inspired
yeah.
by your community and everyone. I think everyone, at least in this world that I'm friends with in this town, has a different sound. There's people that remind me of each
really
other, but
smart way of saying
they've
it.
Got their own sound, and that's cool.
Yeah, because I think when you do scale it up, something like Nashville, even just take the country scene as a whole here, we think it's this giant world, but it is still relatively insular in terms of at least popular music. But it's certainly in our eyes pretty, it's big. I mean, it's the whole world out here, but that is interesting because when you do scale it up in that way, it gives you freedom as an artist to, when the scene or whatever you want to call it feels steady enough, you as an artist can kind of carve out your own little idiosyncratic hole over here.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel like you're having to support the thing yourself. Whereas maybe if you are, that's just a cool thing I've never really thought of. But if you're in a smaller scene, something like Asheville or something akin to it, you, if you're in that country scene, let's say, it kind of falls on you in that small pool of people to like hold the thing up and keep it going. Whereas if you're in a place like Nashville, where like you're, the country scene's gonna be happening whether you're here or not.
Not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere. So it's like, it allows, that's really cool. It does. It allows you that ability. I never thought about that. It allows you the freedom to experiment in ways that you may not feel you could otherwise. Like for you, what are the influences outside of traditional country music that you feel like you want to, that you feel are really important, that are in your sound and in what you do?
That's a great question. I feel
guys,
like
that's two today. Oh my god.
Oh man, I know, you're just killing
on a roll,
hidden with those good questions.
We're good for the next couple episodes now, like
I can just fucking, slack
I can slack off for a while.
What was your question again? Like, well, it was so good I forgot it.
What no, like what about what outside of country music do you feel like you want in your music? Like what's what are the influences that you've like that needs to be there?
That's kind of actually the this problem I'm having right now is like my first record was so eclectic. I have so many influences, so many cross genres that I love, and just, you know, traditional country music was a deep, you know, well of inspiration for the record itself. But in, you know, the process of writing my next record, I'm just trying to write from a place of enjoyment. I'm in the process of writing it right now. I'm trying to,
because the first one came out, what, 2 years or
just
year ago, 2 years
less
or something
than
like
a year ago.
Oh, okay, cool.
It feels like
it's 2024. September
2024.
I can't keep track of my dates anymore.
A lot of great records coming out.
I feel like since 2020, it's like it's anything is just like before or after 2020. So I have no ability to judge time.
No, 2020 was definitely 2 years ago.
Yeah. Okay, so record came out a year ago, somewhere around there. When that was done, did you feel like, I'm trying to think how to phrase this. Did you feel like, okay, that's a weight off of me. I'm done. I can move on to the next one. Or did it feel like, shit, that was close, but it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do. Like, I feel like some people, people generally, in my mind at least, kind of fall into this binary. It's either like, okay, the thing's done. Thank God, let's move on. Or it's done, but it's only begrudgingly done. And like, I wish I could have tweaked, even if it's phenomenal, like even if it's just fantastic. Some people just like, God, I wish I could have done this. Like for you, what was the feeling when it was done and you could step away from it?
A lot of different emotions, in releasing this debut record. I did have an immediate sense of relief and joy, gratification for finally having a body of work out there.
It's
that
exciting.
People can listen
it's so
to.
Exciting. Yeah.
And I was so stoked, but like, I mean, you know, most artists, you probably get this from, you're an artist yourself. Like you release something and then you gotta be careful to not get into this state of chronic dissatisfaction of like, this wasn't perfect. I could have done this better. The writing could have been stronger. The playing, you know, whatever it is, I feel like you can always pick apart your work.
Yeah.
But I'm just like glass half full. Like I have this, you know, feeling of excitement and opportunity for the next body of work that I'm working towards. Mm-hmm. Because the first record was, you know, a decades long.
You have your whole life to write the first record, and then it's done. You're like, oh shit! Now I
and
gotta
now
actually
I'm like
live
the
up to that.
I feel a little bit of pressure, excitement. You know, all the feelings in writing this next record. But I've been touring since like the day the Somebody
Damn,
New
yeah.
came out. I've been hitting the road hard touring the record, and you know, busting ass. I work at a restaurant, and I have all these like little tiny side jobs right now. So. You know, it's not so glamorous all the time, obviously, but I've been, you know, I haven't had the opportunity to really slow down and get to writing the next or even process, you know, what has this record accomplished? Who's heard it? But then again, when I'm on the road, I meet people that come out because they've heard the record on the radio, or a friend told them to come out to the show because they heard, you know.
That's got to be an awesome feeling.
It's the
best.
That's
got to be amazing.
And that, I just have to think about my progress from when I moved from North Carolina to Nashville to where I'm at now. It's been less than 3 years, and, you know, I did the whole Broadway shit.
That's fucking
and
big. I mean,
released
that's something
a record
proud of,
A lot's changed and happened, and now I'm writing this second record, and, Yeah, I'm happy. I'm overall, good feeling. And that was a very long-winded way.
That's awesome. You know. I mean, because there's a lot emotionally that goes mm-hmm. into something like that. You know, like, did you, when you were doing the first record, because you have your whole life to write the first record, did you find that the cuts that you put on there were from kind of all over your life, or was it the most recent material you'd been working on? Like, how did you edit and decide what to put on there? Like, whether it be something you've had in your back pocket for a long time that you've been playing, or did you lean more towards new material? Like, how did you decide that?
It was a mix. There was some tunes that made the cut on the record that I had written 6-7 years prior, when I wasn't even out playing music. And I was like, you know what? Like, you know, I gotta, you know, honor this tune that I wrote so long ago.
It's a good song, yeah.
You know, it's just tunes that I felt like needed to make that cut, and I'm really happy that they made it on the record. It was a split mix. There was like half new, half old.
Gotcha.
But with that being said, it's a pretty eclectic mm-hmm. sound. There's not really one genre on the record. So, yeah. You know.
No, but it's like, one of the things that's great about it is it's eclectic, but it doesn't feel herky jerky. Like, it feels cohesive, which is that's a hard line to, it's, you know, that's a tight rope to walk. And I feel like the record does it really well, where that's hard. Like, what did you find musically was the trick for that? Like, did you find, I'm not even sure who's on the record, who's playing on the record. I don't even know.
It was a great cast, man. We had Dennis Crouch on bass, Nate Leith on fiddle, Chris Krugs on steel.
Yeah, the 18 one.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah.
It's a good lineup right there.
I'm trying to think of who else to, Mose Wilson, guitar,
nice.
Hannah Juanita, backup vocals. I know I'm missing folks. Oh, we had, we had Jeff. Why can't I remember your last name? I'm so sorry, Jeff.
I always feel bad when I ask questions like that, like just in conversation where I'm like, oh shit, like, I hope you can remember the people. I can't remember who was on my last record, you know?
Well, you know, someone would step in and play like two notes on the keys and like leave the room. So it's hard to cover everybody.
That's a really killer cast.
Amazing cast. And I can definitely, you know, I just had such a terrific time creating the record, and definitely owe my thanks to Mose too.
Yeah, because Mose produced it, right?
And Mose helped pull together the team, you know, the musicians that worked on the record.
He's got a really great, he's got a really great ear for production. Besides just being a great player, a great songwriter, just an awesome guy, he's got a really good ear for that kind of shit.
He so does. But when you ask about the cohesion and how all the songs kind of feel like they belong together, we, mm-hmm. you know, he helped produce that sound, and we worked together to make the songs make sense together. Mm-hmm. And I think I wanted to go for 10 when I first cut it. We ended up just doing 9 because I was like, these are the 9 that feel good.
Yeah.
And the next record, you know, probably 10, maybe more.
Did it feel like work to edit it down to the songs that you used, or did it feel was it easy to pick? Okay, these are the 9 tunes that we're using.
I just, you know, it was my first record, so I didn't really know.
That's true. You don't really have anything contrasting.
I'm like, could I do 8? Could I do 12? Like, where do I want to go with this? But it just, I don't know if I necessarily have an answer. I think 9 just felt good, and those were the tunes that made sense.
Yeah, and that's the way to do it. It's just, Brian, you losing it over there?
I'm good.
That's the way to do it. It's just like, follow, you know, follow like your gut and what feels right. I feel like with anything like this, it's like you kind of just need to, there's a level of overthinking that can happen very quickly, and just follow your gut and what feels right. And if it feels like 9 songs, all right, then 9 songs. Great. What was, in terms of arranging and getting to be able to get into a room and record those tunes, did you have really solidified arrangements when you were going to do the record, or was it more like, you know, here are these songs, how do we want to present them? Like, where on that spectrum did everything fall for you?
We did a good deal of pre-production.
Okay.
Me and Mose, when we worked together, we both agreed to just get her done. Like, we just like needed to get the pre-production in, and just make sure that we were on the same page before we brought it to everybody.
Yeah.
But you know, these guys, like the A-team, they can hear it in one take, and it might not even be how you hear it, as you know, me playing solo, or me and mm-hmm. Mose, who had you know, done the pre-production together, we might have even heard it a different way as, you know, a duo, and then the players really help bring the tunes to life. And of course, with your producer's direction, they can set the vibe for the tune for sure.
That's killer. That's awesome. Yeah, it's always like the balance in life. In any musical context, when you're playing with another person, is like finding that balance of, okay, is this the direction I thought we were going to go in, or is this a different direction? And then it's like that. I think if I'm going to distill any of it, like if I'm going to distill any of it down, I think that's what it is when you're playing with another person. That idea of, okay, like if Brian and I play, I mean, Brian and I played a long time together, but like he'll do something. It's like, okay, is this where I expected this to go, or is this somewhere different? And then it's like this constant like tug of war, not even tug of war, but it's this dance of like, okay, do I want to follow that direction, or do I want to lean back into what I was thinking? You know, like I don't even know really how to phrase it, but I've never really thought of it like in those terms. But I think that's an interesting dynamic in music, is like when someone presents something that you didn't necessarily think was on the table. It's like, okay, do I like this direction? Like, do I want to just lean into it and see where it goes? Mm-hmm. Or do I want to kind of forcibly go the other way? And I feel like anytime you've tried too hard to steer the ship the other direction, it's like, just go with it. You know what I mean?
Like, do you
just
tend to like really have like, as far as the arrangements and the production of the whole thing, do you tend to have like a very rigid kind of idea of how you want things, or do you kind of just let musicians kind of do their thing, or like what's that like for you? Like a strict plan, or kind of just a skeleton and a lot of leeway?
I've been known to be stubborn.
That's good. Nothing wrong with that.
But through the process of cutting the first record, I really learned how to listen and hear everybody's voice, even if they're not communicating, you know, verbally, like this needs to be this way. I can hear their expression if they play something different, and they're like, what do you think about this groove instead? Or what do you think about, you know, this, what if we change, you know, the vibe of the song entirely and give it just a different feel altogether? I think a couple of tunes on the record actually ended up, you know, changing in their tempo, their feel. Mm-hmm. Some of the instrumentation got moved around as we explored and played with the song. So like as much pre-production as we put into the record, that's what's so magic about the studio, is that, you know, everything could change it too.
And I think it's good to be kind of willing to let things shift based on like just how it's flowing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think in all of the planning in the world, it's this weird dichotomy, or this weird like juxtaposition maybe, where like on one hand you feel as though you want to be as prepared as possible because you want to have a strong creative vision for what it is you're doing. But at the same time, I think whatever form you're in, you can't handcuff yourself to that entirely, because something, when you're dealing with other people and there are other creative minds at play, someone might come up with something that you think, oh, this is the direction we need to go in. Like, there needs to be that play of coming in really strong with knowing what you want to do, but also just being completely open to the moment. And I think all of my favorite creative people in whatever world they work in have those two things in spades. And it's such it's such a weird thing, because they do seem like they're in complete conflict with one another. But I think it's the best recipe for making art. But again, I'm an idiot and I know nothing. I've said that so many fucking times on this goddamn show. So who are like the big songwriter influences for you? Who are the ones that you love?
Oh man, I always struggle on the spot. I'm like, flashcards flying out of my sleeves
right now.
Just
people that you like, just people you listen to. It doesn't have to be like, you know, it doesn't have to be like the top five, but like, who are just people that you listen to and you think, oh shit, I love that. That's great.
I go through crazy kicks where I just listen to somebody for like, that's just an artist for two weeks to a month. And you know, I've always been an Emmy Lou fan forever. Nice. But I've been diving into some of her deeper cuts after me and my buddies, Wild Bill and the Bruisers and Mallory Eagle. We went on a run recently.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that too.
Yeah, it was a joy. But you know, Will does a great rhythm guitar, one of Emmylou's Lou's tunes. And I went back to that record and kind of just went down a crazy, like, Emmylou hole since. It's been awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of who else I've been listening to lately, the writings of. it's hard. A lot of older tunes, you find out, you know, there's always a ghostwriter. So I'm like, who's a true songwriter that I...
Yeah, there's some...
Fred Eaglesmith's been really speaking to me lately. Gosh, man. It's a hard question. I don't know. Because I've been listening to a ton of tunes, and it's not even in the country genre. Like, I might have to come back.
We'll circle back. Yeah, yeah.
Let me think on that one.
Yeah, and I think it is the Nashville world's interesting in that regard too, because there are so many behind the scenes people. You know what I mean? Like, there are so many great writers out here who, you know, you listen to that tune, you're like, oh, that's so and so wrote that. I never would have guessed. You know, so it is a little different. And then there are some people who can just do it all. You know what I mean? Like someone like Roger Miller or someone like that, like great performer. And I love him, but also just wrote some of the best fucking songs in the city. You know what I mean?
He's a big influence of mine.
Oh, there you go. I love it.
You're telling me mine.
Oh, perfect. There we go. I'll just keep naming them all off. You know?
Yeah. Great, you know, old school, great contemporary writers that's funny that you asked that, because I feel like lately, as I'm going back into the writing process for the second album and like putting my head down for a second and, writing, I've also been listening a lot. I think that's been helping me kind of warm up to this second record and what I want to write about, what I want it to sound like, and gaining inspiration, you know, from these artists is everything. That's been my key tool and getting me inspired, creative, ready for this.
That's
for
awesome.
This next sound.
What when you got out to Nashville? What was the stuff that surprised you the most? Was there anything, I mean, even outside of music, what was the stuff that kind of, like, we got out here and I think the big thing we realized immediately was Nashville's pizza sucks ass. I think that was the first time, that was the first thing we realized. We were like, God damn, our pizza out here sucks.
There's some decent places.
I know. Okay.
Smith and Lunch is really good.
Shout out. They're pretty damn good.
I like DiGiorno's.
It's no Frank Pappas, but it's smirking good.
But my point being that, like, you know, there are those things that you get out to a new place.
Mm-hmm. That was really surprising to you, the pizza?
Well, I mean, I think it was just that bad. Enough. Like, what were the things when you got out to Nashville that were like, maybe not necessarily like culture shock, but just different than you expected from North Carolina or Connecticut or Canada?
Like the food is this hot take. I think it's getting better, but when I got here, I think it sucked ass a little bit.
It could use some improvement.
See, here's the thing.
It has gotten way better. I feel like so many restaurants and stuff are popping up that it's kind of... Yeah.
Here's my thing. There's some fire food out in Nashville, but it's not the food I would expect. Like, don't get me wrong. You know, hot chicken, I'll have it every couple of years. Yeah, sure. It's good. Whatever. But there are some pretty fire spots out here, but it's not what I would have expected. You know what I mean?
I just want a diner.
Yes.
I just want a diner.
Yes,
like,
please.
It's just the mint, low mint tier. Like,
oh,
I'm
my
like,
God.
Just please.
I want
like,
something
I don't
a step
just...
up from Waffle House. That's all I want. You know what I mean?
No.
I want like, just, I just want like a legit, I want a legit diner somewhere.
24/7.
There's a good place like right down the road from here off of Dickerson Pike.
Which one?
Is it a 24-hour diner?
No.
Oh, damn.
But I think it's called Ruby's Diner. Is that what it's called?
Okay,
and it's like dirt cheap. It's like going back in time before inflation.
Okay, maybe
is it good?
It's good. Brian. Yeah, okay. It's really good.
Okay.
This is a big deal for me because I've
revelation.
Had this exact same thought so many times. I just want I'm a huge Twin Peaks fan. I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but like I want like the Double R Diner in my fucking. You know what I mean? Like I just want a good solid 24-hour. Kind of crappy diner.
There's just all these like random fusion. I agree. Just like hot chicken or like crazy barbecue. I don't want that. Like I just want like good Asian. You know, we have great Mexican food here, which is awesome. Just get back to the basics.
It took a long time for me to find the Mexican food out here.
This is so hot take.
We're from like.
What's your favorite Mexican food place here?
Oh yeah.
There's a new joint. It's called Amorcito.
Okay.
It's right down the road from y'all. It's It's amazing.
Do you not like it?
Oh, you don't like
okay,
it?
So here, you're talking. Okay, here's the thing though.
It's not bad, but I wouldn't.
Eliza, you're talking to Mexican food snob. So, like, we
grew up in San Diego and spent my whole life eating.
So, we're like, we got out here and we're like, what is this shit? But no, there's some good places. You just gotta find
it. Have you ever been to the one near D's at, what's it called? Taco Z Mariscos, Lindo, Mexico? Lindo. It's Lindo's, like the big purple building.
Yep.
That one's fire.
That's the best one. That was my runner up to Aracino.
That's our go to.
Those burritos.
The one down the street here is pretty decent. But
Way to really shoot her down, dude. My God.
No, he's like, your recommendation sucks.
No, I didn't. That was you. It's, I don't know.
Yeah, we've got some, stuff to work on.
I agree. And
you need that
Aracino's
in the world.
Good. Like, but you know, it's like, I get it. Yeah. I just said I'm looking for more options all the time.
That's true.
That are solidly good. Because sometimes you go somewhere and it rocks, and other times you go and you're like, "What is this shit?"
Yeah, there are some good spots, but it's like not what I would have expected coming out here. There's some good Mediterranean stuff out here. There's some good like Americana, like kind of fusion-y stuff, which is not usually my thing, but there is a good food. I think it's getting better too. Like obviously, as more people come out here, I think it's bringing people. We're gonna get In-N-Out soon. And
I'm is it right Mount Juliet? Though?
It's gonna be like right up the street from here.
Fuck.
Okay. Oh yeah.
I'm so excited,
and also like so
this
fucking
is the best
worried
neighborhood
like,
to live
oh
in.
My god, it's gonna be the fucking best. I'm gonna be driving up here like 6 days a week. It's gonna be bad.
I'll probably gain at least 10 pounds.
Oh but. Yeah. Oh yeah. That's gonna be like the Sunday ritual coming up here to do this thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh my goodness gracious. Yeah. I'm so excited. We've been like following this. I remember when we first moved to Nashville. I remember like the first month we moved out here. We just like we didn't have a place because we just came out here like essentially on a whim, and we rented like an Airbnb for a month. And I remember looking on Reddit or something akin to that, because there were rumors that In-N-Out was coming to Nashville, and this was like this was before anything was happening, and they were all being squashed. Like, it's not happening. This is just something in the ether that's being thrown out there. And then like a few years ago, probably like 5 years ago, we got word. It's like, it's fucking happening.
They're moving their headquarters here. So I'm sure there's going to be a bunch all over.
Oh, I'm so stoked.
I hope if we start enough rumors, they'll bring a Trader Joe's up here.
Oh my God.
That's what we need. Start circulating.
Yes.
It's not, I never go to them anymore just because the ones like down south.
They're
inconvenient to get to. I'm never around that part of town.
No one who doesn't live in Nashville is going to care about this at all. But the one down south, that Trader Joe's, that parking lot is like the bane of my fucking existence.
It's like a whole day. It's like, you better not.
Oh yeah.
You better not have anything else.
Anywhere in that area by the Green Hills Mall. Yeah. It's just a shit show down there.
To and from work every day.
Oh, that sucks.
I work down in Brentwood, so I've got like, my commute sucks. It's so bad. But I'll drive by that Trader Joe's and I'll just like literally every day when I come back, like past that Trader Joe's, I'll think, I'm so thankful I'm not in that parking lot right now.
My day might have sucked, but at least I'm not in the Trader Joe's.
It's like 4:30 and I'm driving past the insanity of that parking lot. I'm like, I'm going to Publix or whatever.
Yeah, not worth it.
it is wild how much Nashville's changed. I mean, I can't imagine the folks who've been here their whole lives, or you know, or even just longer than we have, how different it's become. And I mean, especially in the last handful of years, but I'm sure just incrementally, it's slowly gotten there. But what do you think like the biggest changes are that you've seen in the scene here musically? Like, do you think that it's starting to get more like niche pockets of country music and different things like that? Or like, what do you think the direction is that the Nashville music scene's heading in? This is a complete crapshoot of a question, but I always think, where is this heading? You know what I mean? Like, do you ever think about that? I
overthink these things. I think it's heading in a positive direction. I think that it's kind of hard to say because I haven't been home in a while. Mm-hmm. I just got back, and from what I've seen, I think that there's been a lot of changes. Like Honky Tonk Tuesday moved, and I haven't even been
to the new one yet.
I know. We need to go.
It's been like a year, probably. It's been so long.
I love the cow so pokes, many, and yeah, they so do many a good friends job. Have
played there too with them, and like yep. I just haven't done it yet. I'm like, it's I feel hard. Like the era in my mind is like over. But
let's
it's
go
not,
to the next one.
Let's do it.
It's out there, and like I think Skinny Dennis is bringing in some cool like opportunity.
Oh my god,
that's changing everything.
To totally just derail again what you're saying again. I'm sorry. I don't know, this past month, right after they'd opened, my other buddy, Brian, was like, hey, let's go to, it was like a Saturday night. He's like, there's this new place that opened in East that's literally like 200 yards from my house. Like, it's like the end, I get out of my neighborhood and it's like right there. He's like, let's go check this spot out. Like, they're doing, I'm trying to think what it was. They were doing some like, God, what was it? Whatever. It wasn't a live band. They were doing like some kind of like country DJ'd set, whatever. I'm trying to think, who was it? I think Western as Fuck or someone was like that. Someone like that was doing like a DJing a night.
Cool.
And we went and got some drinks and like just hung out. And he was like, let's go down the street to check this out. And we walked down there and it was like somebody teleported Broadway to outside of my neighborhood in East Nashville. It was insane. I mean, honestly, like we got in after a while and we just like hung out. It was fun. Like we had a good time and it was, you know, we had a hoot. It was great. And anytime hanging out with those guys is a ball. But we were like, what is going on? This is absolutely wild. And I guess during the week, it's like, it's a little more chill and a little more laid back. Like when we were talking to Hannah, she's been playing there a little bit and she was saying the same kind of thing. So I need to go on like a random Wednesday or something to see, because in my mind, when I think of that place, I just think of just like it was packed. Like you couldn't move.
Some
I was like,
too,
what is
with
going
on? The ticket nights.
Anyway, sorry, that was a complete side tangent.
No, it's true though. Like, I think that the scene is, like we were just talking about the food, like the food's leveling up, the music's leveling up. I think things are leveling up. I think that, you know, at least my friends and myself are becoming more defined in our sound and mm-hmm. just kind of carving our own paths, especially the independent artists out there doing it. Just like really trying to make a name for ourselves, but also... Yeah, like really, everything is starting to feel more established from when mm-hmm. It's always been, but I think in my first couple of years here, I was just, you know, moving into really like cutting my teeth, playing out every chance I could, anywhere mm-hmm. I could. I was down on Broadway a lot. I was at every club imaginable. And I think me personally, like I know that joints I like to play. I know the people I like to play with. I think in my own way, my sound, my music is becoming more defined and refined.
Yeah, it's getting closer to like you. It's such a hard thing to express, but yeah.
And I see that in other artists in the community too. There's people that have been doing it forever and have had their sound and honed in on that and established that.
But just having like Mal in here. I mean, I know Mal's she's not like in town anymore, but like it was so fun to listen to her play too, because like, God, like this is sounding more like you.
Yeah.
Like don't get me wrong. I've always loved Mal's stuff and I've always loved playing on it and she's just the best. But listening to it, I was thinking, oh, like this is, there's so much more happening here. And I think that's just time. I think that happens on an individual level, but it also mm-hmm. happens on sort of the bigger kind of macro scale of a music scene like this. But yeah, it's really cool to see. It's cool to see like people start to kind of come into their own a little bit. Tell me about tour. What was all that?
Tour.
Give me the craziness of tour.
It kind of started at South by Southwest. I went down to play some showcases with Hannah and Moe's and did my own thing. And so when was that? That was like February. I did a run, a Midwest run with Wild Bill and the Bruisers, Mal.
Oh, I bet that was fun.
Mallory Eagle. And that was incredible. I'd never done a Midwest run before. I came back. I flew down to Texas again for one night.
Oh, damn.
Played a show. It was so fun. It was, I don't think
You've
I slept.
Busy, dude. You've been like, yeah.
Grinding. And then I just got back from California. Like a few days ago, I did a Southern California tour. And this is all just like been the long game of just promoting this record.
When you're doing that kind of stuff, are you playing on your own? Because I know the run with Mal and the Bruisers, you were doing like a, from what she was saying, it was cool. Like, it seemed like everyone was kind of jumping on and playing together, which is awesome. When you're doing other tours, are you generally playing solo or are you playing with a band? Like, how do you do it?
I do the old school way. I have, like, pickup bands in different cities. Cool. So awesome. It's part of, like, the experimenting with this, you know, hitting different cities and seeing where I want to play in those cities. I've been finding my band in different major
That's
cities,
really
too.
Awesome.
And it, so far, like, has gone incredibly. Mm-hmm. I had an awesome band in L.A. They kind of had, like, a 50s swing.
Awesome.
But, like, also, like, rock and roll edge to their sound. Rockabilly guitar. It's like it was just a random, like, cool group.
Yeah.
Really cool group. And then the Midwest, the Bruisers backed us, and at the beginning of the tour it was three different acts, but it was seven solid nights, so we had it was just all gas. Like, we played every night, and we all, by the end of it, were like a family band, like singing
That's
on
cool.
everybody's
nice.
songs. They backed us, and then I played some rhythm, Mal played some rhythm, but we were singing on everybody's songs.
That's cool.
And we were all on stage the whole night, 3 hours a night.
That's gotta be a great approach for when you're looking to be, like, when you're in the stage that you're at currently with a new album on the horizon, with writing and trying to figure all that out, because you get a little bit of a taste with playing with all of these different people throughout the country of what that could be, like the different forms that music could take. Like, that's a cool thing, because I've never done anything like that before, like those kind of pickup band scenario. But I bet that does have some benefits like that. I bet you get a full picture of what's possible with the songs. You know?
Yeah, it totally. Sometimes I have a new song that still is being developed. Like my tune Away Too Long, I wrote that a few months ago with Aaron Pete Lukes. And, you know, we wrote it. I came with the rhythm in mind and, you know, like the general tempo and the sound mm-hmm. and the feel. And yeah, that song's developed so much as I've toured and played with different bands, brought it to friends that I trust in town who have been like, oh, you should, like, you know, maybe add this five right here, you know, whatever
yeah, yeah.
it is, like little bits and pieces have created this mosaic that has become this song, you
That's
know,
awesome.
Workshopping it with other people and getting to run it by the ears of people that mm-hmm. I trust the musical opinion of has
yeah,
changed.
One thing I wanted to ask you too is, what's your relationship to co-writing? Like, how some people work in that world really well and other people, not like myself, not so much, but like how have you found, because Natural is such a, it's geared so much towards that co-writing mentality. I don't know what Asheville's like, but I imagine it's not quite as much as Nashville. Like, how have you found you've been able to play with that?
Huge pro.
Yeah.
Big
nice.
Fan of
good,
co-writing.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fairly new to co-writing. It's been a couple of years. I've written songs for funsies with friends, but like this, like really like being intentional about it and being like, mm-hmm. hey, I have this tune. I think I want to cut this song. What do you think about this? Bringing someone else into that space is really special, you know? Once you lock in a co-write, like with somebody, they're a part of the trajectory of that tune. So I just like to be intentional about the people that I include in the co-writes. Sometimes I just come with a blank canvas and want to try something new with somebody I've never written with before. But just like any relationship, it just takes trust to build. There's people I love co-writing with and work well with creatively. There's people we've tried and, you know, I think they're great writers. And
yeah, it just doesn't gel the same way.
It doesn't gel the same way. And that's totally cool too. But I think if I know I can't get somewhere with the tune on my own, or I think someone else can add their own flavor mm-hmm. and, it, you know, I know that they'll benefit the tune, then I'd love to at least give it a shot with that person.
As a co-writer, what do you feel like your strengths are? What do you feel like you bring to the table? Like, what is the spice that you add that you think is distinct when you're having that play with someone?
That's a interesting question. I was gonna say great question, but I keep
Guys,
responding
I'm on
like
fire
that
tonight. Okay.
the flavor I bring, I think when I come with an idea, I'm a very passionate writer. I think if I will wake up in the middle of the night sometimes and like have an idea on my chest and I have to write it out. I think I come with I feel like this is like a job interview. Like, why am I the best candidate? But like, I think I do. I bring passion to the table. Mm-hmm. If I come to a co-write,
Lyrics first, melody first. Like, what's your way in when you're doing that kind of thing?
If I'm coming into a co-write, I have both figured out to a certain. I might have a hook. I might have a verse or a chorus, but something is written down for me to bring someone into it. It's usually there's a hook there, but yeah, sometimes not. Melody usually comes first to me.
Okay.
I'll like be humming something in my car. I'll record it and then I'll
look at that. That was so sly.
The hospitality.
My God. Look at that. That's how we do it here.
Thank you. Cheers.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
Yeah.
Nice. That's good.
Yeah. Sorry. I got sidetracked by this delicious juicy
Topo Chico. One day they'll be paying us to have these things on the pod, but you know, until then, Ryan, I'll trade you.
Do they even sponsor anyone?
I have no idea. I don't care. They'll sponsor us. Fuck it. We'll make it happen.
We got to get some sort of...
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I think I keep thinking about, like, one thing we were talking about, too, is we were saying, like, what we should really do is we should put, like, fake sponsorships in. Like, the most, like, ridiculous... like just come up with, like,
Spread the rumor till it's true. Well, that's
not even real stuff like Topo Chico, but, like, do, like, just ridiculous... Like, do, like, fake adult diaper ads and, like, things like that. You know what I mean? Like, I think that would be hilarious, but we'll see if we eventually get around to... you know, that's a lot of work. We'll see if we eventually get around to it. But I think that there's potential there. You know what I mean? And then we could like just sprinkle them in. So then when we get like legit ads, people aren't going to know, like, is this a real ad? Is this a fake ad for like, you know,
I don't know.
Well, one day we'll get there eventually.
What were we talking about before I derailed this whole thing?
I have no idea. It doesn't, we can talk about whatever. Oh my God. I think that's an interesting, skill set that some people get really good at, being able to co-write with others. Like it's hard because it's such a precious thing. Whether or not you can do it well, it's still such a precious thing when you're making something. It can be hard to let other people into that, which is probably why I don't do it very well. But I always find it very admirable those who can do that well and who can approach a song and like give it life with someone else.
Yeah. It's a skill, and I'm still building that skill, you know. Mm-hmm. Some people, it's just like we were talking about earlier, like every interview is not made the same. Like,
yeah.
Everybody's going to bring a different conversation to the table or bring something out of your interview with them that the next person may not. And it's the same thing with co-writing. I think some people really bring this like creative spark out of me, this drive to finish a piece together. And it's really a growing skill though that I'm learning. It's been really fun. I think that's something unique about Nashville. You asked earlier about kind of this shock or you know, what's different than living in a different city. I've never lived in a city where people just get together and co-write. Yeah. And that's a part of the Americana culture, you know. It's probably awesome. Happened in other places, but, yeah, but this, you know, is my first time.
Yeah, we'll pretend like it's not. We'll pretend like Nashville special. So there you go. What kind of music outside of country music do you like? Like you mentioned soul music earlier, but like what's, you know, I feel like a lot of us who are even the people who are very much in the country scene here, most of them didn't grow up listening to fucking, you know, Hank Williams or whomever. Most of, you know, we listen to like fucking, you know, math rock or hardcore or like, totally. You know what I mean? Like what's the other stuff you like to listen to that's more maybe outside of that Nashville, that seeming Nashville world?
Like as of late, I've been really into Art Town, Michael Hurley, like kind of folky, fringy, weird shit.
That's cool.
I'm a rocker. I love rock and roll. I've always loved classic rock. I don't know if I'll ever outgrow it.
Come on.
Yeah. I love modern. Like, there's some great modern rock and roll bands that I've been just crushing on musically. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Who are those? I'm curious. Because I feel like I never, like, there aren't modern rock bands that kind of, like, do it for me.
Right now, a couple bands that come to... Okay, so psychedelic rockish with, like, a Western flavor, rattlesnake milk is really cool.
Okay.
Strongly recommend a listen.
The name alone.
They're rattlesnake milk. They're super cool. Yeah, I really like their sound. They're based out of Austin. Also, based in Texas, is the Texas Gentlemen. They're kind of rocking, too.
Cool, nice.
They did something with Paul Coffin, a couple tunes, and yeah, they're neat. They do some studio stuff. They're, yeah, like a true, like, rock and roll band right now. Oh, the Heavy Heavy. I am obsessed with the Heavy Heavy. They're British.
These people. I got some homework.
British rock and roll band. I said they're like a nine-piece something big, or nine. Wow. They came over... Early James, who I just opened for, he opened for them at the the Blue Room. He opened the Blue Room for them.
That's awesome.
And he was incredible. And their show was just, it blew my mind.
That's amazing.
Friend's weed pen helped.
There you go.
As it was, I was in the front row for like 4 hours. At least it felt like that. They were so good.
I can't get the rock and roll out of me. You know what I mean? Like it's the best. My day job is I'm a middle school music teacher.
That's sweet.
And the other day this past week I was showing some of my classes Led Zeppelin. I was showing them some live Zeppelin. And I showed them a live performance of Stairway to Heaven from like, I'm trying to think. But anyway, it's one of those songs Brian and I've talked about. It's one of those songs where you've heard it a million times. It can get kind of like memed on a little bit in the world. And like, I get it. You know, we've all heard Stairway to Heaven. But dear God,
it is a fucking amazing, amazing song.
That song is unfucking believable. I made them sit through all 10.5 minutes. I'm like, you're gonna fucking watch
but
this
that's
shit.
Like a formative experience because I have the middle school teacher that probably showed me
Robert Plant shirtless up there just fucking going for
it's
it.
It's kind of sad when a song gets like so overplayed that it kind of like loses its people think of
but
it.
But to us, because we've heard it about, not to them.
It's so good.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah, I feel like a lot of like, that happens with them a lot. It happens with Pink Floyd. I feel like that happens with some of their stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like, Pink Floyd's one of the greatest bands of all time. But there are some of those acts that are so good and that are so big that
one song just kind of like
but
Deep Purple is another one only know Smoke on the Water, but they have so much good
people
stuff.
People know the riff to Smoke on the Water. That whole song is fucking so great.
But it's just like a meme of being like everyone's first song they learn on guitar.
Which is funny because everyone learns the one riff and they forget that it's like an 8-minute song with like all of this other crazy shit going on that like nobody remembers for whatever reason. Zeppelin, I was forcing them to watch some of that. I was like, you guys are going to you're going to enjoy this. It's so awesome. When Bonham comes in like 6 minutes into the song, you're like, oh my God. Anyway,
you can only hope that your song is so overplayed.
I know, right?
That it's memed. It gets burnt out in modern cult. Like that's the goal.
I do feel like, and don't get wrong, I'm sure that there are awesome rock bands out there that are still making great stuff, but there's something about that snapshot in time, where it's just so there is such good music in that classic rock vein that it's sort of, it's a moment that's passed and it's like
like late 60s through the 70s era was definitely like a golden era, especially for rock music.
Hard rock became hard rock. Oh God.
Like, and then the 80s came around and it all went downhill.
And I like I'm like late 50s, early 60s.
Oh, yeah, I'm the same way.
Probably I've been really into kind of like bubblegum, like rock, and my guilty pleasure lately has just been some like good old like rockabilly, Gene Vincent.
Nice.
Just early stuff. It's so good. I actually don't know. Don't quote me on I don't know what areas, but it feels late 50s to me. So
it's
classics, man.
It's also just such a great moment in time when our music got across the pond and then reflected back at us.
Yeah. Wow.
Whereas like there's this really beautiful moment in American music where, cause my music I love is traditional music. That's what I've spent my life studying and what I love, but like there's this moment, so this is a little bit kind of later out of my knowledge of music, but there's this phenomenal moment where our music gets across the pond and infects everyone over there, and then we're like forced to stare at ourselves in the mirror, and it's like, and it brings the level of everything up when you've got guys like Zeppelin who come back, or you know, who come out here and just show us this new presentation of our own thing. And yeah. like, and then everyone here is like, fuck it, let's go. And it's just, there's like this, there's just this perfect storm of just, you know, whether it's, you know, Clapton and Cream or whatever, you know, just such, or, Hendrix in some ways, but God, it's an era of music that I do feel like gets memed quite a bit at this time, but like, it's different than listening to like AC/DC. Like, don't get me wrong. 12-year-old Casey loves some AC/DC. I'm not putting AC/DC down, but like, listen to AC/DC and then listen to like fucking Zeppelin. It's like, come on, dude, come on. Or yeah. Anyway, what a side tangent. But
I actually talked to Angus Young the other day.
Did you really? Hey. Dude, AC/DC rocks.
No, sponsor us.
They're staying at the hotel I work at.
Oh, that's killer. That's awesome.
Cool. Yep. Nice guy.
Yeah. No, I say that kind of half jokingly because genuinely, but I think they're
definitely one of those bands I loved as a kid. They don't really hold up as well now as an adult.
Yeah. But I think that's the thing that people like don't. Yeah. That's the thing Get people don't it. Like think about though is like that music is made for you when you're 12. Like, I know that sounds stupid.
But
there's
gonna
be some people who listen to this that get so triggered by that.
Yeah, but you know what? No, but like. It's just true, though. Like,
I'm going to clip this up and put it out there, and it's going to be
perfect. It's going to just live
inside a lot of rage on the internet.
I genuinely feel that way. Like, that music is exactly what it's supposed to be. And when you're that age, it's like, oh, it's like it just hits perfectly. You know, like, honestly, I'm going to say things, something like this that people are going to feel the same way. It's the same thing with like Guns N' Roses. You know what I mean? Like Guns N' Roses is made for 16-year-olds. It's awesome. And when I was 16, I was like, this is the coolest thing in the fucking world. But
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, whereas like Pink Floyd, I can listen to that I'm 14, or I will listen to that song when I'm 90, any of those songs. And I'll be like, oh, that's a damn good
There's
band.
There's bands that have aged better with me or, you know,
CCR, dude. Oh, fuck it. Could, come on. That's I some of the best writing of all time.
Some CCR right God now. Damn.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go.
Anyway, I just, yeah, that's, come on, AC/DC, fight me. Let's go. we'll get Angus on the pod and we'll, I'll present my case, you know. So this is why you a suck trial. If you're not a child. No.
I feel like you're being too harsh on them. They're not that bad.
No, they're awesome. Genuinely, AC/DC. They can fuck. Anyway, so what's next on the horizon? What do you got going on? What's coming soon?
Man, I'm back in my writing era. I'm writing that second record right now. I'm playing a lot locally. Probably some touring coming up in this later year. Definitely. I'm like doing the calendar in my head. Touring, writing.
Love it.
Hanging out. Just getting inspired.
Yeah,
that's again, good.
Because I'm really, really stoked to write the second record.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that like we were saying earlier, that second record's hard because you do have your whole life to write the first one, but I think so much of it is just feeling like you want to do it. You know what I mean? And like that's absolutely. I think that makes the world a difference, as silly as that may sound, and seems like you're fucking stoked on it. So I'm excited to hear it.
Do you have any lessons you learned from the first record that's going to influence how you do the second one?
Yeah, I think taking my time. I mean, I'm really happy with how the first record turned out.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of it, but taking my time, taking my time to make sure that these songs are written the way that I want them to sound. And even if by my third record, I'm like, I'll be happy that I put in the work on the second record and let it be a mile marker that I'm proud of when it comes time for
Absolutely.
The third or fourth or, you know, not to let myself get ahead of enjoying the process to like really be present in it, but also hold myself to a standard of how I want to sound, how I want to write, how I want the art to be reflected.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking at it through a lens of optimism and opportunity and excitement instead of like dread and, you know, some sort of time constraint that is going to
How long did you have in the studio to do the first one?
Well, we kind of, you know, the band cut the tunes quick. They're ace. They nailed.
Not messing around.
No, it was probably like all in all, probably 6-7 days spent in the studio, collectively. Like we, you know, we did the backing tracks in 2 days, and then I came in.
Brian's smirking because I've done all three of my records in 2 days.
That's insane.
I like show up and play.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was.
That's awesome.
I wanted to cut some of the vocals again and do some like backups on myself. And I had some friends come in and add textures and layers. So like collectively, maybe it was like 4 or 5, but it just felt really long.
Yeah, no,
or like
that's awesome.
A couple hours here and there. But it was, 2 days is wild.
Well, I'm also just crazy. So there's that.
I love the art of people just going in and doing one take and like dropping the mic and leaving too. It's awesome.
You know, it's like anything. There's pros and cons. Yeah. You know?
I want to do like, you know, an EP or something like that and just in a day, like a few tunes or an EP in a day, I think, and just let the work be the work and not try to perfect it. So
yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm so stoked that we got you on here. I was saying before we actually started rolling that, so we rescheduled this because Brian, we talked about this on the show before.
We went through this already.
Brian accidentally harmed himself in the head.
Apologies that you drove over here.
But we were like,
it
would be so funny if like we showed up and Brian, we had him all like bandaged up in the head.
We should have thought of that ahead of time.
That would have been funny. He survived. He survived. So we made it. It's all good.
I'm glad you lived to see another day. And we're able to have me on the podcast today. It's been so fun.
Thanks for coming back, even though we had to bail the first time.
Second time is the charm.
Perfect.
It was so awesome.
Yeah. Dude, I'm so glad you did this. This was fun.
Yeah,
fun.
Thank you.
Oh,
thanks,
y'all. That was awesome.
That was great. So thank you. That was so fun. Y'all bring the fun.